This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. We're launching a new occasional segment on Weekend Edition today. It's called Upshot, and the idea is to bring you an update on compelling NPR interviews or enterprise and investigative stories. Our first upshot is Barbara Bradley Haggerty's story about an abuse scandal among Hasidic Jews in Brooklyn. The piece first ran about a month ago on All Things Considered. Barbara joins us in our studios. Barbara, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
I understand there have been some developments in the story since it first ran, and we're going to talk about those in a moment. But first, how did you hear about this story?
Well, you know, I kind of got wind of it from a lawyer in New York City who follows sex abuse cases in the Catholic Church. And she told me about the scandal in the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic community, which is a little bit like the Catholic Church situation 50 years ago, where alleged victims are afraid to come forward and challenge the rabbis, and the rabbis kind of circle the wagons and deny the alleged abuse. So I began to make some calls, and Scott, I got to tell you, I could not believe what I found. And this had not been reported in the mainstream press.
Barbara, let's hear your story. We should note some of the subject matter may be disturbing.
So you lived on this block?
Yeah, I'll show you. 153.
My grandmother.
Joel Engelman and Joe D'Angelo are showing me around their old Brooklyn neighborhood. Williamsburg is a place from another time and country. The shop signs are in Hebrew. The men wear long black coats. Their hair hangs in corkscrew curls. Engelman and D'Angelo haven't been here in years, and they just met a few weeks ago. But they realize they have a lot in common.
I have a brother-in-law, Gantz.
Dude, get out of here, really?
Yeah.
Both men are in their 20s. Both were raised as strict Hasidic Jews, and both fled their upbringing for the same reason.
Are you ready for this?
All right.
You don't have to do this one.
Would you rather not?
No, I'll do it. We'll just do a quick pass by.
D'Angelo grows quiet, visibly shaken, as we approach a nondescript brownstone building, a synagogue.
Yeah, I need to breathe.
When he was 7, D'Angelo went with his father to the mikveh in the synagogue basement. It's a bathhouse for ritual cleansing before Shabbat. One particular day, he says, the place was packed tightly with naked men and boys.
And I was in the tub, and I had my back turned to the wall, and just somebody raped me while I was in the water. And I didn't really know what happened. I couldn't make sense of it, really.
D'Angelo says he never saw the man who abused him. These days, monitors are posted by the bath to stop any sexual activity. But back then, the boy was on his own. He told no one, but began refusing to go to the mikveh. He left Orthodox Judaism when he was 17. He changed his name from Joel Deutsch and cut almost all ties with his family and friends. Now D'Angelo wears black leather and mascara and takes refuge in the heavy metal lyrics of Metallica.
They have a latest song which is called Broken, Beaten, Scarred, and one of the verses is they scratched me, they scraped me, they cut and raped me. That's my life right there. And when I listen to it, it just gives me strength.
For these two men, this is a tour through aching secrets and violent memories. D'Angelo and Engelman are unusual because they let their names be used, but they believe there are many more young men just like them, that sexual abuse is woven throughout this ultra-Orthodox community. For Joel Engelman, the loss of innocence came at school.
And this is it, right here.
Engelman parks his car across from the United Talmudical Academy, a yeshiva or Jewish boys' school. Engelman says he was 8 years old, sitting in Hebrew class one day, when he was called to the principal's office. When he arrived, he says, Rabbi Avraham Reichman told him to close the door.
He motioned for me to get on his lap, and as soon as I got on his chair, he would swivel the chair from right to left. And then he would start touching me while talking to me. He would start at my shoulders and work his way down to my genitals.
Engelman says this occurred twice a week for 2 months. He told no one for more than a decade because Reichman was a revered rabbi. 4 years ago, he told his parents, and last April, when he heard that Reichman had allegedly abused several other boys, the family confronted the rabbi. When the school heard about it, they gave Reichman a polygraph.
He failed miserably. So they pretty much told me, this guy's gone, this guy has to go.
But a few weeks later, a religious leader from the school approached Engelman's mother, Pearl. She told me he posed an astonishing question.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad was the molestation?
She was speechless. Then the man said,
we found out that there was no skin-to-skin contact, that it was through clothing. So, like he's telling me, on a scale of 1 to 10, this was maybe a 2 or a 3, so what's the big fuss?
The school hired Reichman back. That was in July, 1 week after Joel Engelman turned 23 and could no longer bring a criminal or civil case against the rabbi. Through their lawyers, Reichman and school officials declined to be interviewed for this story, but Rabbi David Niederman, who heads the United Jewish Organizations of Williamsburg, says the school did its due diligence. He says the allegation was thoroughly investigated by an independent committee of laypeople and rabbis.
I'm convinced that they've made a serious investigation. They felt that it's not credible.
Joel Engelman has filed a civil suit against Reichman and the school, claiming they broke an oral contract. Reichman's attorney, Jacob Laufer, says the lawsuit is baseless and the community is fully behind the rabbi.
Even after these accusations were publicly made, the parents continue to compete among themselves for the opportunity to have their children be educated by Rabbi Reichman.
The Reichman case is not isolated. 4 ultra-Orthodox rabbis in Brooklyn have been sued or arrested for abusing boys in the past 3 years. That's a tiny fraction of the actual abuse, says Hella Winston, a writer who's interviewed dozens of alleged victims. They told her sexual abuse is an open secret, but the Hasidic community is so insulated and the rabbis are so powerful that few dare to come forward.
If I become known as an informer, then people also won't want to have anything to do with my family, won't want to marry my children, won't want to give me a job. This is the fear.
Tonight we have some very special people in the studio. You do not want to miss tonight's show.
Last August, politician and radio talk show host Dov Hyken devoted a show to sexual abuse.
Let's go to our callers.
We're going to go to Lev in Bar Park. Lev, you're on the air with Dov.
I want to thank you very, very much, Dov, for doing this show. It's very, very important. I'm talking as a victim.
The calls flooded in. Hyken, who's an Orthodox Jew himself, represents this area in the New York Assembly. He says after the program, people started showing up at his office with their stories.
50, 60, 70 people. But you got to remember, for each person who comes forward, God only knows how many people are not coming forward.
Hyken refuses to release names of alleged perpetrators, though he is working with the district attorney's office. He says the fear of going public creates a perfect situation for abusers.
If you're a pedophile, best place for you to come to are some of the Jewish communities. Why? Because you can be a pedophile and no one's going to do anything. Even if they catch you, you know, you'll get away with it.
To me, it does not make sense.
Community leader Rabbi David Niederman.
That so many people have been violated, and for so many years they have been quiet, something does not add up. It's being blown out of proportion big time.
But Brooklyn District Attorney Charles Hines says he has 10 active sexual abuse cases involving ultra-Orthodox Jews, including a school principal who was recently arrested on a lead from Dov Hyken. And he says there could be many more. Yeshivas are private schools. They don't come under the same regulations as public schools. And often, Hines says, they don't report accusations of sexual abuse to civil authorities.
I have no way of knowing whether there's a pattern of concealing the conduct.
Hines says the Jewish leaders, like Catholic bishops, try to handle these affairs internally through a rabbinical court. It's a practice that infuriates him.
You have no business taking these cases to religious tribunals. They are either civil or criminal in nature, or both. Your obligation is to bring these allegations to us and let us conduct the investigation.
Hines says he's trying to work out an agreement with the rabbis where they promise to bring the prosecutor every allegation of abuse. Pearl Engelman is skeptical of that. She says the rabbis have hardly been forthcoming in her son's case. Still, she loves her community and worries these allegations have already tarnished it.
This is a community of the most wonderful people, hardworking, people who lead righteous lives, And it's just a few corrupt people who give us a bad taint.
Her son Joel isn't so sure it's that few. Anyway, for him, any remedies come too late.
Pretty much the way I see it is I left my childhood here. After I left here, I had a totally different picture of school, religion, and life.
But Engelman hopes his story will shine a light on the secret and perhaps protect the next generation of children in this community. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
We're back in the studio with Barbara Bradley Haggerty. Remarkable story. What's happened in the past month since it's been on the air?
Well, there have, Scott, been some really important developments, but all of those have actually occurred kind of outside of the community. Inside the community, I wanted to get a take on this, and so I called up Pearl Engelman, Joel Engelman's mother. And she told me that virtually everyone in the community has heard the story because it was posted on the community's most popular blog, and it got a huge response.
Oh, many said they knew people personally, and some said they were themselves victims.
But even with all the publicity, there's been what she called a deafening silence. People haven't talked to her about this situation, partly because in this Hasidic community, people never go to the civil authorities, they don't make waves, they don't talk about these things. And she followed up with this answer.
It's unusual to come forward. It's unusual to be outspoken about issues, especially a subject that's been swept under the rug like this. And it hasn't only been swept under the rug, but there are many people standing on the rug.
Nevertheless, you said there have been some developments.
That's right. This morning, Assemblyman Dove Hykind, who we heard in the piece and who brought this abuse situation out in the open, is going to host a morning support for sex abuse victims. It's going to be at the Y in Borough Park, which is kind of the center of the Hasidic community. And there are going to be several rabbis there and neighborhood leaders who will be speaking. Now, it's mainly a symbolic gesture, Scott, but it's the first time that this community has ever held a public meeting about child sex abuse. Now, there's another development that's potentially much more powerful. The New York Assembly has just introduced a bill to increase the time, the age limit for when someone can bring a case from 23 years old to 28 years old. You'll remember that Joel Engelman had just turned 23 when he went public, so he couldn't bring a criminal or civil complaint. Also, the Assembly is proposing that for 1 year, anyone can bring a complaint, no matter how long ago the alleged abuse occurred.
These are people who, because of the story you did, are willing to come forward for something that might have happened 20 years ago.
That's right. I think people, I've understood that people have become a little bit more emboldened since the story, since I know that there are other people out there. Now, the House has passed this three or four times in a row, but it's never made it through the New York Senate. But this year, it appears that it's got a lot better prospects, partly because the situation is coming out in the open, and partly because there are a lot more people in the Senate who say they want this bill to be passed.
And let me ask you finally about the alleged victims. Since the story aired, have more people come forward? Are there any new investigations?
More people have come forward at this point anonymously. There's a new victims group called Survivors for Justice, and they just had a meeting a couple of weeks ago. Several new people came to that meeting, and one of the men actually said that he had witnessed a young child being abused in a mikveh, in a bathhouse, a few years back. Interestingly, a detective from the Brooklyn Sex Crimes Unit was there, and I've been told that she's investigating that case and several others that have come through that group's tip line. A couple of other people have come forward anonymously to say that they had problems with the school teacher who allegedly abused Joel Engelman. But I got to say, that teacher is still in the classroom today, and the school refuses to talk about it because now they're embroiled in a lawsuit.
Okay. Barbara, thanks so much for following up on everything for us. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty, thank you.
You're welcome.
And to read more about the allegations that were reported on by Barbara Bradley Haggerty, you can go to our website, npr.org. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.